This podcast was recorded on the lands of the Boon Wurrung people of the Kulin Nation, the land on which we're lucky enough to raise our sons and daughters. Always was and always will be Aboriginal land.
In this episode of Witching Hour, we're excited to partner with Yuha, trusted and loved for premium breast pumps since 2010. Their portable and wearable designs provide comfort and convenience. They empower you to pump effortlessly anywhere, keeping you connected to what matters most. Discover the complete collection of Yuha Australia's premium breast pumps and handy accessories at yuha.com.au. And even better, you can use the code READY15, that's READY15, during the month of July for 15% off the Embody Pump. Hello and welcome to Witching Hour, the show that looks at what's exciting, delighting, intriguing and frustrating us when it comes to making work, work. I'm Lou.
And I'm Loz. Starting things with a good news story. Nurses and midwives in Victoria are set to receive a 28.4% pay rise over 4 years in a new pay deal that has ended months of negotiations. It comes after 51 days of industrial action. The deal will also see improved working conditions, including an allowance for ward changes, better night shift penalties, a right to disconnect clause, and a reduction of the qualifying period for parental leave from 6 months to zero.
That's actually wild, isn't it? Such a big increase. It goes to show how significantly underpaid they've
underpaid.
Been.
Yeah, nearly absolutely.
That's about a quarter of a pay rise. Today, I am not my kid's playmate. The Instagram post that had mothers feeling seen the world over. Apparently, Taylor Swift, as an unmarried 34-year-old, isn't a good role model. I have some thoughts. And on the note of ageism and motherhood, this week's poll is all around that small window that Lozzie and I have talked about previously, and that is the acceptable age to become a mum and have babies. Take it away, Lozzie.
I am not my kid's playmate. Big Time Adulting, run by Caitlin Murray on Instagram, had a post that I think has gone somewhat viral.
Nearly 4,000 comments.
Whoa, okay. And has really resonated with myself and you, Lou, amongst many of our friends. I want to read it out and then dissect it a bit. Caitlin says, I have 3 kids and have been a mom for 10 years, and I can count the number of times I've engaged in real play with my kids on one hand, maybe both hands and a couple of toes, but you get it, it's rare. I engage with my kids a lot. I talk with them. It's one of the things I love most about them getting older. I joke with them, cuddle them, dance with them, do a puzzle, get active outdoors or play sports with them. But under pretty much zero circumstances will I ever engage in play that involves role playing or doing anything imaginary, because wait for it, I can't fucking stand it. It bores me to absolute drips. And to be honest, I do enough task-oriented things for my kids that I have to do, meals, clean up, laundry, etc., and I refuse to add play to that list. I simply do not enjoy it, and my energy is important to me. When/if they've asked me to play, I let them know in a soft way that it's not something that I do. They accept it and move on. I've talked about this before, and some people have literally been appalled by my unwillingness to engage with my kids' imaginary play. Some people think it's sad. I, on the other hand, think it's kind of normal for a grown woman not to be interested in playing princesses. If you enjoy imaginary play with your kids, that's awesome. I hope both you and your children have wonderfully fond memories of it together. My point is not to take away from your experience. My point is, many of us become parents and are surprised by the parts of it we find less than appealing, and that is okay. There is never only one right way to do something. My kids are awesome and my relationship with them is so solid. I have found that trusting my own instincts in what's best for me and my kids has almost always been the right thing for us, and I hope more parents can find peace knowing there is no formula or script or way that you need to feel like you have to do things. Your way will do just fine. Fuck the guilt.
What I love about her too is in her Instagram bio, it says, get yourself a snack. And she put up a post just yesterday that said, fuck mum guilt, get yourself a snack. Just to add to the many reasons I love her.
Yeah. I think why this went so viral is because so many people think it and no one says it. Like, what are the types of play that you engage with, Ray?
The timing of this post could not have been more specific to how I've been feeling,
because Ray is getting to that age where he requires a little bit more of me, almost physically and intellectually from a play point of view. He's starting to actually become a person that grabs at my legs and things like that. And I have really been thinking, get down on his level, get down on your knees and play with him. And lately, since this post, what I've done is identified what I actually like doing. And I feel so much less guilt about the things that I don't want to do. I don't want to ride his cars around the room with him. What I want to do is chase him up and down the hall. That's fun. I can get around that. Wiggles dance parties at nighttime. All for them. I love a dance. Great way for us both to release a little bit of energy, all of that stuff. What I do not want to do is try and read a book to a kid that's not ready yet. Like, he just rips those fucking pages. I feel bad every night when I try. It just doesn't work. This lady, she validated the absolute fuck out of me. What about you?
I think people should be able to engage with their kids in whatever way works for their family. I actually listened to a podcast again recently after reading this post by The Imperfects, and Chrissy Swan was on it, and it was so spot on. One thing that she said that resonated with me on so many levels was that her family likes trying different places for dumplings, and like, that's their thing, like where to find the best dumplings.
You might fall asleep again though, Lozzie, because you got so full and fell asleep the other time.
Oh my God, I know. I literally went to like bed at like 5:30. But I think that's okay. Like, there's certain things that I love doing with my family that might be weird for other people. Here's an example. I don't like imaginary play. I've got no interest in it, but I love dance, as in just letting loose, letting those hips swing, just doing whatever the fuck you want. Like, you don't have to do some form of like, you know, cool dance. Just having a good old time. I do it in the morning. So like before they eat breakfast, we just like have a good old dance off. I pick the kids up, go around the kitchen, do whatever, sit them down, get that energy out. I love it. And I feel like for me, it's doing two things at once. Like, obviously, you know, I'm a productive freak. Number one, it's setting up the day in a successful way, putting everyone in like a happy mindset, including myself, even when I just CBF. Number two, it's a way to get them to eat their breakfast at the time that I want them to eat their breakfast. Otherwise, what ends up happening is I start the day, I'm like, come on, Sienna, eat your breakfast. Come on, sit down. It's time for
everyone's
breakfast.
Everyone's in a bit
I don't
of a bad
do that
mood.
Nagging. Yeah. Nah. So I just crank the tunes, annoy our neighbors, and we just
have
get on
fun.
With it. Yeah, exactly. I read another article too, and it said, as parents, we have a limited amount of time and energy that we can devote to being 100% with our kids before we either get busy, tired, burnt out, or annoyed. It is normal.
Oh, wow. Get out of my brain, whoever this is.
And sometimes I think imaginary play or like using a different part of your brain to come up with something that's not in the box is more exhausting when you're working. Because every day I'm putting on a version of myself that fits in with the team, that contributes ideas, that makes sure that I'm like managing up, meeting with the right people, like all this talk about bringing your authentic self to work. I'm for it. I love it. But I also think you can't always do that. And you're showing a version of yourself to your workplace that is or that does require some amount of work.
Yeah, so you get home and you're a bit drained.
I don't want to do that again, man. Yeah. I don't want to do that.
I'm not like, role-playing here and at
I don't
work.
Want to
That's
be Cinderella
really
tonight.
Point. Yeah.
Like,
I was already Cinderella at work today, actually.
Tiring. So it said, what if you don't like playing with your children? Let's be honest. Many of us don't, and that's okay. Give yourself a time limit. I love this. To avoid burnout. If you feel like you'll have to play for hours, you'll likely feel resentful. But if you give yourself a time limit, say 5 minutes per day of high-energy play, or maybe it's like half an hour once a week, then you won't feel like playing with your kids is such a big deal. It gives them their dose of connection and you won't feel trapped. Have you ever felt trapped by like wanting to be this person that you're actually not for your child?
Totally. It's really interesting. If it's housework related, for example, there's a million things that I can see need to get done, but I need to also focus on Ray. I feel more just overwhelmed. If I'm trying to get paid work done and Ray wants to play, I feel guilty. And it's really interesting, that paradox, because things around the house, I guess I feel like are serving Ray more. So I probably think to myself, no, I need to do X, Y, and Z because really it's for you. Whereas if I'm avoiding play because of paid work, I almost feel more guilty that way.
Yes, I agree. I actually agree with that. It's so difficult too. I mean, this is awful, but it's a common scenario when you've got a sick kid at home that needs your attention.
Yeah.
But you also have shit that you need to do, like a deadline or something. And I know everyone's saying family comes first. I absolutely agree with that. But part of you is, depending on your personality, if it's like mine, it's going to want to get the task done.
And when Sienna's like whinging. It's over your head. So as I agree with you, I'm all for the family first stuff, but sometimes the anxiety of leaving that work is worse for you than just quickly getting it done.
Yeah, it's true. And that's what I find difficult. It's normally like when Sienna's slightly sick or Zay's a bit sick that he requires more from me in terms of participation, wanting to like meet his needs, wanting to have fun. And those are the exact times where I'm like, mate, watch Peppa
Pig. And you
do,
you become frustrated.
You do. You absolutely do. So this is saying have a time limit. Let them know when you're going to finish playing and then give them some sort of one more time and then stop. And there will be tears and there will be whatever. But again, coming back to boundary setting, it is okay to say we've had your 5 minutes of play. Now we're going to stop. And it's not the end. It'll happen again. And let them express their emotions, do whatever they need to do, because the likelihood is they're just as exhausted after doing that play with you. And that's why they're frustrated or upset or whatever, because burns energy.
It's really interesting.
You know?
Lael Stone, when I interviewed her for Ready or Not, which must have been in the first sort of 15, 20 episodes, she talked about how it's all about quality time over quantity. So parents of our generation often feel really bad that we're potentially engaging in more paid work than some mums of the past. Not always the case. Working class women, as Stephanie Westcott recently said, have always worked, but there are more women in the paid workforce today. She said, it's more about that quality time over the quantity. We also know that we are spending more time with our children than previous generations because we framed the stay-at-home mum as being always there for our children and spending every spare moment. We've sort of been fed this lie that we're spending less time with our kids, but it's actually not the truth at all.
Yes.
It's just a different makeup of the use of time. Stay-at-home mums weren't on the ground all the time. Even last week's episode, when I said that my mum said she wasn't always on the ground with me playing just because she was at home with me for portions of my life.
I absolutely agree. It's not about getting down the floor. And it's also not about this imaginative play. So there's probably all kinds of ways you already spend time with your kids that aren't pretend play and aren't onerous to you. Maybe they're even somewhat, I wouldn't say pleasurable, but enjoyable. Start allowing those to actually count in your mind. So it's really important to snuggle up with your kids and read with them. Maybe that's
and
how
I love
you
doing
do
that.
Play.
I love
I sometimes do a little voice in a book, you know?
Like, yes.
The fairy said, I don't speak well, but you know, something
voice.
Like that, you know,
just
like really get involved. Or like, for example, the other day when I had both kids, we had a movie morning. Because CBF, it was pissing down rain. And I was like, we're going to have a movie morning.
Rain's,
did I give him
rain's
chocolate
the hardest yeah. one when you can't get out. That's the hardest.
Yep. Or we go for a walk where we talk to each other. We put them in the pram. We talk about what food we're going to get. That for me actually is like bonding time. It's not traditional, but it's driven by togetherness. And to be honest, I feel like that feeling of togetherness is really when it comes down to the
That's
core.
That's all that matters.
Is exactly what it's about. Yeah. One last thing this article did touch on was it said that our society sends mixed messages to us about how much time we should be spending with our children. If you spend too much time connecting with your kids, people accuse you of letting your children run your life.
Or that you're that mum that has no identity outside of her children.
Exactly. Spend too much time doing your own thing and you feel guilty because you haven't made enough time for your kids. Or people are like, oh, you know, sometimes
she's not a very dedicated mum. She's always
exactly. Absolutely. Someone said to me the other day, there's a person that we know that's having a third child. And one person said, I find that so bizarre. She just doesn't seem like the mothering type. And I felt like saying, what is the mothering type, mate?
Yeah.
Like, okay, maybe she's not someone that gets outside with her kid every 5 seconds.
She's
like
not
they
making
enjoy
a spending, fresh batch of muffins every morning.
No, she enjoys spending time at home, doing her thing. Kids are watching telly. It doesn't matter. Like, if she's made the decision to have a third kid, that's what suits her. What suits her lifestyle? Like, let's go a bit easy on each other. Do your best to bring balance. The balance changes on a day-to-day basis and depends on your needs and the needs of your children. And whatever you do, make sure that you're actually having fun. Like, if it's torture to do the types of play that you don't want to do, don't do them.
This post totally reframed my mind because if you're engaging in play that you hate, you're not really there. You're feeling all those negative feelings that you already highlighted. If you find something that you both love, the benefits are for everyone. It's something I'd never thought of until I saw this post, and I think it is brilliant.
Lou, you've been using the Yuha Embody hands-free breast pump on your feeding journey with Posey. And having worked together while you've been using it, I have to say I was in slight disbelief at how quiet it was. In your opinion, what is it about the Yuha Embody breast pump that makes it so good?
Okay, the first thing I have to talk about is I did wonder, because it's so wearable, so convenient, smaller than those pumps that plug into the wall, I thought, will it get me as much milk? I couldn't believe that it got me just as much, if not more, than those ones that you assume are more powerful because they plug into a wall. Not the case. The Embody got me so much milk. I was so impressed. So that's the first point. The second was, I work as a producer in my day job. So I was on set in a studio last Wednesday and I had the pump going, kept it in the bra because it is so wearable. And I said to the team that were on set, the talent, I'll pause it now because you're about to start recording again. They said, we cannot even hear it. Keep it going. So I could keep pumping while producing this show. Third and final thing I noticed was how easy it was to disassemble compared to the one I used when I was pumping with Ray. It was so easy to pull apart. I was in this kitchen dominated by males, and I know we shouldn't mind, but I was still just a little bit embarrassed hiding what I was doing. It took me 5 seconds to disassemble, put that milk into the bag that I was taking it home in. It was so easy, and I so appreciate a quick and seamless process when you're feeling bad and you want to get back to your paid work.
If you're pregnant and considering pumping, in the market for a new breast pump, or looking for a pump that's discreet, effective, and lightweight, head to yuha.com.au to check out their full range.
And don't forget, for the month of July, use the code READY15 for 15% off the Embody pump. Taylor Swift is not a good role model, according to a Newsweek journalist called John McGlion. Don't even know how to pronounce his last name. And for reasons you'll soon understand, I care not to pronounce it correctly. He starts the piece by saying how influential and iconic Taylor Swift is and how the level of fandom associated with her is like something we've never seen before. But then, Lozzie, and now I quote verbatim, and it's the sort of thing that you wonder, why do we even bother giving light to this? But I want to discuss it. He says, although her economic impact is extremely beneficial, it's worth asking yes. if Swift's influence extends positively to other areas. More specifically, is she a good role model for young girls in the US and beyond? Numerous pieces have been written explaining why she is. I would like to offer some pushback.
God, Swift, I can't wait now, to hear this, Johnny boy.
Swift is now the most influential celebrity in America. Her popularity is staggering and her position as a cultural colossus is unquestionable. At 34, Swift remains unmarried and childless, a fact that some might argue
she's
is irrelevant.
34. But she's also not fucking 65.
Lozzie, why who cares if someone's 65 and unmarried and
you
childless?
Know what? Agreed. You're right.
Yeah. I had to bring that up because I know you agree with that.
Yeah, I do.
A fact that some might argue is irrelevant to her status as a role model, but I suggest it's crucial to consider what kind of example she sets for young girls.
Oh, is he a cult leader? Is he part of a cult?
Probably. I think we'll have to do some investigating.
Johnny, the cult leader. Yeah, he seems culty.
He does feel a bit culty. He's giving
Utah man.
A role model, by definition, is someone worthy of imitation. While Swift's musical talent and business acumen are certainly admirable, even laudable, we must ask if her personal life choices are ones we want our sisters and daughters to emulate. Tell you what, if my daughter brought in a couple of bill from making some music, Don't think I'd feel terrible about that, rather. This might sound like pearl-clutching preaching, and yes, you're right, John, it sure does. But it's a concern rooted in sound reasoning. I think that's if you're from John's cult. What do you think, Lozzie?
Yeah. No, 100%. Yeah. Wouldn't Swift's be many highly... people in there, John.
A cult of one, and he's trying to push it further. Swift's highly publicized romantic life has been a source of prime tabloid fodder for years. She has dated numerous high-profile men, at least a dozen, including singers Harry Styles and Joe Jonas, the actor Jake Gyllenhaal, and more recently, the American football player Travis Kelce. This revolving door of relationships, making my blood boil, may reflect the normal dating experiences of many young women in today's world, but it also raises questions about stability, commitment, and even love itself. Should we encourage young girls to see the Swift standard as the norm, something to aspire to? Or should we be promoting something a little more, shall we say, wholesome? Would any loving parent reading this want their daughter to date 12 different men in the span of just a few years? A few years, John. Well, firstly, yes. And secondly, yes with a T. I mean, yes. And secondly, as you're about to hear, it's not just a few years.
I would say to Sienna, taste the fruits of the sea. Yeah. Explore the ocean.
Have an oyster. There's a big ocean out there.
Yeah, exactly. You don't know what you like. You're young. Exactly. Don't tie yourself down. Like, you're better off to find the person that you like instead of settling for someone that's no bueno.
That actually comes up in the poll very soon. Oh, so I love that you just said that, Lozzie. His last line that I'll read out, which is just gorgeous because it's not true. This is not an attack on Swift. It's a valid question that is worth asking. Now, Lozzie, it feels like an attack on Swift to me, and I've got some stats for you. I did not expect to get my head deep in a Taylor Swift dating timeline, not now, not ever, but here we are. So I literally put into Google Taylor Swift dating timeline, and this is what came up. So we are looking at from 2008 until today. So that is a time of 16 years. Am I correct?
I mean, I can't count off the top of my head, but yeah, it's a long time. Sounds good, doesn't it? Yeah, yeah, sounds good.
So in 2008, she dated Joe Jonas. She was 19 years old then. Lucas Till, 2009. Taylor Lautner, 2009. John Mayer, 2009 to 2010. A few
that
other blokes.
Surprises
I won't
me.
Name them all. She dates Calvin Harris. I didn't know that. Harry Styles did know that. A few other people until we come up to today, which is Travis Kelce, who she's in a relationship, a very public relationship with. And I'm rooting for them. He gets around her so much on little podcast snippets I see on the socials. He and his brother seem to absolutely put her up on a pedestal. He knows how many songs she performs in any one show. He knows how many people go to her shows. He is there for her. And I love to see it. So maybe, perhaps, she's dated all of these people to find someone that she actually likes. Even if that's not the case and they break up tomorrow, I don't care. But my question for you, Lozzie.
Yes.
Men like Johnny Boy from The Cult of One.
Yeah.
Why do they still have such a problem and why do they not know what to do with an independent, successful 34-year-old woman?
I think there's this linear life progression that successful women should follow, or mostly all women. So that line would be a sweetheart, marry someone, you know, maybe you're virginal, you know, first boyfriend, or maybe a couple of boyfriends down the track, no more than four.
Oh, then, don't you dare go further than four.
No, no. And then buy a home together, do lots of beautiful PR together where you're sitting in a lovely home near a fireplace with a veggie garden. And then maybe at 2 years after you get married, have kids. And you know what? In fairness, like I followed that progression. But
so did I hate to say it.
Exactly. But I wouldn't say really it was because of the ideal of the future.
No,
I think it
just
was
happens.
Because that's just
it
what
It sometimes
happened.
Happens. And that's
exactly.
fine as well, right? That's fine.
Absolutely.
And the reverse is fine.
For sure. But I would suggest these days, I mean, it's easier and harder to meet people because you've got online. So connecting with people is easier. There are more avenues to meet people, like, you know, you've got different apps. And I genuinely think women are placing value on their careers, which is amazing. And maybe the focus that they're placing on finding the one at the age of 25 is waiting till they're a little bit older, which to me makes sense.
I went to our audience to get their opinions as well. And I want to read them out to you and then add a little bit of discussion around them.
Okay. I'm also going to add to this. When things seem to be going well, people don't like that. Like, where's the drama? Why isn't she breaking? She just had this world tour of like all these people. Like, what was it? Like the highest ticketed concert like to date ever?
I think so. Yeah. Yeah.
And then articles get released like this. Oh, but she's not married. Oh, but she doesn't have kids. It's like a one-upper mentality. Like, who are you one-upping, mate?
That
no
is
one cares.
So interesting. Everyone loves the underdog. Everyone hates the person that's doing well. I put that question to our pollers. I said, why don't men like that, of that generation particularly? I actually don't know. I'm making up what I think his age to be. I'm assuming he's around 50. I actually have no idea. But why don't men of, I guess, a more traditional standing, why do they still not know what to do with the likes of Taylor Swift, a really successful independent woman. Here's what they said, and I'd love to discuss and pick apart all of this with you.
Okay.
One person says, it's frustrating that we're still deeming whether a woman is successful based on whether she's married and had kids. I mean, she's only the most successful woman on the planet. What does she need to be married for?
So that she can tick it off, like a tick box, so that she can prove to everybody that the relationships that she's had have all been duds and this is the one. And she doesn't give a shit. And
yeah,
neither do I, quite frankly.
That's so right. For those sorts of people like Johnny Boy, it means nothing but really ticking an item off your to-do
list. And you know what? Once they do get married, the speculation never stops. It'll be like, oh, you know,
when Travis
slammed a door. Yeah, it'll be either when she's going to have a kid or, oh, he slammed a door, like trouble in paradise for newleds. You know, like it.
Yeah,
they're doing.
They're on other
they
sides of the country because he's playing football and she's at a concert, and they'll turn it into living separate lives on the east and west coast of America.
See?
Very good point. Someone else said, because a woman's sole purpose on this planet is to have children and her clock is ticking. They're obviously saying that sarcastically, just as you were with the box ticking example. Next person, because a man choosing you is what tells the world that you are A, safe and B, valuable. Too much power, charm and influence while also being a single woman is intolerable for people's sensibilities. That said, as a 35-year-old Swiftie and mum of two, I'd love to see Taylor married with kids, but that's only because she's sung about wanting it so much. I'm not really a Swiftie, so I was really surprised that she sings about it so much. Are you a Swiftie?
I only wanted to have kids. I mean, I am now, but I'm not like invested. I mean, I only
we don't know to have kids
so that
song.
She can so that she can pass down those costumes.
Oh.
Like, they can't go to waste. Imagine the amazing like sequin numbers she has. Her boots, unbelievable.
Can you
like,
imagine Sienna seeing them? They need to go into museums so that Sienna can see them. She would love that.
No, they need to be worn. I don't care who she gives them to. Give them to someone, sweetie. Not like a one-time use. They must be worn.
So, Lozzie, to wrap up, can you just say something to our cult leader, John? Just give him a piece of your mind.
John, take a hard look at yourself. Are you happy in your 55-year marriage that you willingly entered at the age of 18? Is your sole purpose your children? Do you enjoy ostracizing others for their family and life choices? And sit the fuck down. Chill out. Jesus, no one cares for your opinion.
Bye, Johnny. That brings me to the poll, which was basically inspired by this Swiftie article I saw.
Okay.
So I wrote as the introduction, which I always do in the stories. If you listen to the show, you'll know we speak often about how there's a very narrow window with which society deems it acceptable to have children. So we're talking all things age and motherhood. First question, Lozzie, for you to guess. I had my first baby at dot, dot, dot. Option A, 30 or under. Option B, 35 or under. Option C, 40 or under. Option D, 40 plus. What do you think is the most common amount among our
35.
Pollers? Yep. Bang on. So 54% of our pollers had a baby at 35 or under. 35% was 30 or under. 8% was 40 or under. And 3% was 40 or over. I then asked, when you became a mum, were you older, much what you expected, or younger than you expected to be?
Older.
Older was 39%. Well done. Ugh. Actually, the top one was more or less the age I expected to be. That was 52%. Older was 39% and younger was only 9%, which is probably not surprising to me that that was the smallest answer or the least answered part of that question. Next up, when I was pregnant, I received comments about dot, 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 being too young, being too old, or wasn't judged at all.
Being too old.
I'm really surprised by this. Wasn't judged at all was the resounding popular answer at 86%.
Oh, that's great. But that's
being
probably
too
because
young,
I'm pregnant between 30 to 35. I feel like if you fall outside either of those
gaps,
if
you go back two
slides, you're too young. You're too old.
Yeah. Well done. You fit whatever I'm told you should do.
Exactly.
So then being too young was actually next up, but not by much. That was 8% and being too old was 4%.
Okay.
So look, I am glad that not many people had troubles with that, but as you just perfectly put, it is probably to do with them fitting that societal norm
mold.
Of age.
Yeah.
Next question. Was age a factor when considering when you might like to start a family? Yes or no? What do you think one there?
I'm going to say yes. Oh, I've got such an interesting view on this one.
Give us your view first.
Okay. My view is when you're starting a family, normally no. If you're extending that family, normally yes.
So you didn't consider age for your first baby, but you have thought about it since for Zave and for the question of if you want a third. Is that what you mean?
Yeah, absolutely.
That's really interesting. So what do you think the poll has said?
I think they said yes.
So 84% said yes, 16% said no.
Wow.
If yes, why was age a factor? First option was worried about how long it'd take to fall pregnant. Second option was societal pressure. And third option was pressure from family members. What do you think won out there?
Oh, family members.
I'm shocked by this. That only got 1% of answers.
Oh my gosh, really?
Yeah.
Wow.
So the most was worried about how long it would take to fall pregnant. That was 91%. So most of people are worried about that. Societal pressure, 8%. And then only, the measly 1% from the family member pressure. I was really surprised by that.
Yeah.
I then asked, why was age a factor if it was for you? Here's three answers. One person said doing the mental math of when I'll have the most energy versus generational gaps versus how old I'll be when I retire and all of that. Another person said perimenopause runs very early in our family, which I think is a really great thing to normalize. So thanks for sharing that. And the last one here is I said yes to age being a factor, but I'm not sure which factor this would fall under. We got married in 2019 at 27. Like lots of people, we had plans to go traveling and all of these things, but that was derailed by COVID. Our plan had been to travel, then to resave and maybe buy a house, and then maybe to resave and have a baby. Come 2021, we felt like the travel and house were off the cards for a while, and that was okay. They could wait, but we weren't getting any younger. So we changed the order and ended up having the baby first. Conception came quickly. Baby came in April of 2022 at the age of 29. Travel and house have still been off the cards due to financial limitations, but baby two is due to join us soon. This is a really interesting one because I've always held that had COVID not happened, I reckon I would have waited one more year before having my first. But because that happened, it definitely brought that forward for me too. So I thought that was really interesting. This brought up another really interesting question in that someone came to me in my DM saying that it was actually also a lot about how old their parents would be. So I asked everyone, did that contribute to when you decided to start trying for a family? The options are yes and no. What do you think grandparents do to come into this picture? How many people do you think voted yes?
Not many. I think it would be
77%.
And
I fit into that camp too. Yeah.
You're joking.
So 3/4 of people are conscious of their parents' age when they have kids.
Yeah, but how much help are they going to be able to provide?
Like, I love that you go straight to help, you robot.
I don't know, but
people also mean joy of having their parents around.
Yeah, I get that. But I also think to have that joy, you need to be spending time together. And the realities of life, I know this is awful, but the realities of life is that you do want the help. You need it. And what we're hearing more and more and more is that those grandparents have their own life. They've worked hard. They want to do their own shit. They don't want to look after your kids, which is totally fair enough. I mean, both of us are in fortunate positions where that isn't us. But by the same means, I have not once did I think about that ever.
I thought about that heaps. I'm the youngest of four. Yeah, because I want my parents to get good time with my kids. I miss my nana still today. She died 16 years ago.
I would know that. I just aged myself about that.
By 2 years. She died 14 years ago, not 16 years ago. But I loved her so much. And I want my kids, rather, to get 18 years at least.
Do you know what? I've never thought about my dad actually dying.
Yeah. You love your dad and he's so close to your kids. So it's not because you don't want him around for your kids.
Even if him being around with them was just sitting there smoking some ciggies, throwing a ball or something, I don't know. I've never thought about it. Never crossed my mind. That really does blow my mind, that stat.
Yeah.
I'm so different.
There were some really good comments that came out of that I want to share. One person said, my parents were a lot younger than this. They're early to mid 50s, but I still had this feeling, mostly due to some health scares in 2020, that days with them aren't guaranteed and we wanted our kids to have their grandparents around. This is for all the people that have lost parents. Someone said, feel this a lot. My parents aren't around and my partner's parents are quite old and unwell, so we feel guilty asking too much of them. Jealous of his older sisters, one had kids over 10 years ago and got lots of help and free childcare. The other still relies on them for the littles, but then they're worn out, so nothing left for us. Both of us are the youngest in our family, so parents on the older side. Also worry about my kids missing out on having close relationships with their grandparents beyond their young years. I reckon that plays a part in it, Lozzie, because you're the older sibling. And so you got the first sort of go at it. Me as the youngest was so aware of
the time.
I guess how much extra time my nieces are just going to have with mum and dad because they're older. But also that care side too, because mum dedicated one day a week to Arlo and Willow, I think. And so that is a really interesting difference between being the oldest and the youngest. Last one here for anyone that worries about this stuff, because we can't always decide when we have kids. Like sometimes that decision's taken out of our hands and we also don't know the future of what's going to happen with our parents. So I think this is a nice comforting one to end on. I worry about this as I've had my kids at 38 and 40. My parents are older, but they're still around, fit and active and spend heaps of time with their grandchildren. My husband's parents are interstate, but I feel like it's kind of out of your control. I know people who had kids younger and lost one or both parents. I'm really happy and grateful I've had my kids when I did. Yes, that was later, but it was the right time for me. So I think that's an important one. We can't always control these things. I asked the pollers, what do you think society deems to be the appropriate age for pregnancy and babies?
25.
Yeah, bang on, Lozzie. 75% of people said that. 23% of people said 25 to 30 and 1% each for the others over the age of 35 or over the age of 40. So everyone agrees with us. Our theory is correct.
Yeah.
So if Taylor Swift falls pregnant in the next few months, maybe John will like her. We'll find
out. She'll scrape in. She'll live up to his high standards.
She'll join the cult.
Just.
If you are someone with a big career who had kids on what some would describe the later side of things, were people then surprised that you were pregnant at all? As in, was it assumed after a certain age that motherhood wasn't your path? So what I was getting at here is I think that often people put mums into camps. For example, say someone is a mum of one for 5 years. I think then everyone thinks they're not having another baby and they're surprised when they do. I think the same can happen in careers. If you see a woman that is really high flying, let's say she gets to 38 and doesn't have a baby, then I assume that a lot of people then just paint her with the brush of, oh no, she's not the mothering type. Like she's not having kids. So I was interested to see if people had that experience. So do you think that people were then surprised that someone with a big career who ended up falling pregnant later, do you think people in their team were surprised? Yes or no?
I think women, no. Men, perhaps, because I still think that age is shifting slightly later. So, I mean, I know of a handful of people that have had kids in their early 40s, and that to me isn't surprising anymore. Mm. I would say for me personally, once I get past 45, I would be thinking to myself, and I know it's not the right thing to think, but I would be thinking to myself, are they or aren't they? But I think men probably over that 38 would be like, oh, I mean, they're a lot more simplistic than women. Let's be real. So they're probably thinking, nah, nah, she's not going to. But women, I don't think they're going to think like that.
Yeah. So it was pretty even actually. So no was 56% and yes was 44%.
Okay.
So pretty even spin there. Next question was all around judgment and comments that people have received. So we've got a few different ends of the spectrum here from the people that were on the older side and people that were on the, in inverted commas, younger side.
Okay.
I had my babies at 38 and 40 after meeting my partner at 35. I had a lot of older parent talk during my first pregnancy, not in my second, funnily enough. When I was pregnant with my first, I was asked if the reason I had gestational diabetes was because I was, what do you call it, geriatric? So I called it out and joked that they were calling me old and then they got really embarrassed.
Good.
I would love to be a fly on the wall for that person realizing that what they said was probably a bit inappropriate. I didn't receive much judgment when I was pregnant with my first as I was 32, so in that bracket, as we say, and I believe this is perceived as an acceptable age. With my second, I had a hard time falling pregnant with secondary infertility and a couple of early losses. I received lots of comments along the lines of, when are you having a second? Your time is almost up, which was so hurtful because they didn't know our circumstances and that it wasn't a choice. I felt pregnant at 34 and then had lots of comments saying it was such a shame there'd be a five-year age gap and that it would have been nicer for my children to be closer in age.
That makes me irate. It makes me irate because when you have kids really close in age, people are like, oh gosh, you know,
yeah,
2 under 2.
I've had heaps of that.
Exactly. And then when they're slightly older, they're like, wow, you know, going all the way back to square one again.
Yeah. People like, are funny too,
because
either that's ridiculous, outside of your control and you didn't actually want that to happen, or it was your actual choice and it doesn't really matter what you think anyway, because that's the choice we made as a family. Why do you care? Last one here on the other end of the scale is, yes, because I was a younger parent, I spent a lot of time and energy being paranoid about people observing my every action in parenting due to being so young, and especially having more than one and deciding to kind of finish our family before a career and parenting alongside it rather than waiting 10 years or so to have another. Really interesting take. I can just totally imagine that. It reminds me of those young mum narratives in movies or TV shows like The Maid, and you can sense her sort of fear of, I'm a young mum and people are judging me. So I can totally resonate with how that must feel. And a longer DM more broadly about ageism in starting a family, just to round things out, because this one wasn't answering anything specific. It just came into my DMs. Met my husband at 39 and a half years old. He said he thought he was too old to have babies, even though he always thought he'd have kids. He wasn't keen on the idea, and it devastated me that he didn't want to try, because I wanted to at least give it a go, knowing full well it may have been too late. We got accidentally pregnant when I was 41 and a half, had a miscarriage, and he doubled down on not wanting it as we were too old. We went to counseling and weren't getting anywhere. Being slow learners, we got accidentally pregnant again just before my 42nd birthday. We now have a beautiful 7-week-old girl, and he wouldn't change it for the world. I think the heart versus brain thing was really evident between us. I didn't care about any of that or any of the what ifs, and that's all he considered. No judgment on my age at all. In fact, people keep asking if we will be having more. I'll be 43 in September. I think that's a really interesting point about the shoulds about age versus just go with what you actually feel and fucking forget about the Johns of the world.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, Lozzie, as we told everyone last week, Tips and Tricks has now taken over the tip segment of this podcast, which comes out every Thursday. You've got a brilliant one coming up this Thursday. So that is it. Goodbye, my lover. Goodbye, my friend.
You've been the one for me, and you will be next week. So please tune in next week. Leave us a review. Positive ones always accepted. Also open to constructive feedback, as always. And follow us on readyornot.pod. See you next week.